So my wife, Nancy, and I are driving back from breakfast, and suddenly the phone rings, and I answer it there in the truck, and a very precious widow lady that I'll call Mary had something on her heart, and I told her that Nancy's here with me. She said, "Oh, that's great. I'd love to talk with you, too, because I'm really wondering whether or not I should consider remarriage." So Nancy and I said, "Well, great. Let's get together and talk." So later on that afternoon, we met at a coffee shop, and we sat down and we talked. And really an interesting situation, and it's not uncommon at all to hear this type of concern from a person. But here's a lady who had lost her husband about 3 years ago, and she's feeling pressure from her grown children and other well-meaning folks in the church to find another man who would care for her. And since there were several men interested in her, she was all the more confused about what she should do. And so she's asking the question, does God have anything to say about this? Are there any guidelines in the Word of God that can help me decide what to do? And over the years, I've discovered there are many unmarried men and women who have struggled with these same questions and the same pressures, as if people pity them for being single or automatically think something is wrong with them because they're single. They hear things like, "Hey, why aren't you married?" Or they try to play Cupid and say, "Hey, I've got someone you really need to get to know," and so forth. So these people have questions like, is it wrong to remain single if you really have no desire to be married? Or is it wrong to remain single if you really do want to get married? Well, fortunately, God is not silent on this matter. And in 1 Corinthians 7, the Apostle Paul addresses this in a most fascinating way. But what's really interesting is his response propels every believer into a magnificent universe of thought that perhaps they weren't considering. He causes all of us to really reconsider how we live our lives. Do we live our life in light of eternity, or do we merely live for the here and now?
That was pastor, author, and Bible expositor Dave Harrell addressing the issue of singleness and remarriage, but more importantly, how we should live our lives in light of eternity. And that will be our topic this time as we gather around the fire. Our discussion is based on Pastor Harrell's sermon from 1 Corinthians 7, 25 through 40, entitled Advantages to Singleness. You can hear this sermon in its entirety by visiting shepherdsfire.org. While you're there, we hope you'll subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Twitter. I'm Dave Hoffman. Dave Harrell is my dear friend and pastor, and we are so glad you've joined us for another episode of Shepherd's Fire. Dave, it's really been fascinating to see how Paul answers specific questions regarding singleness, celibacy, marriage, divorce, and remarriage in 1 Corinthians 7. Mm. In verses 25 through 40, he provides some amazing and very practical insights regarding the advantages to singleness, doesn't he?
Yeah, he really does. And given the unique sociological and cultural issues of that era of history, these matters needed divine instruction, and they still do today.
Yeah. For sure.
It's really interesting to see how Paul answers these things in such a way as to help us really understand the proper priorities and principles that we need to have in our life. And I fear most Christians fail to consider these things. And the basic thrust of his instruction is, hey, folks, you need to make your decisions about singleness or marriage in light of eternity. You need to look at the big picture of life through the lens of eternity. In fact, in verse 35, he helps us see that we need to make it our priority to promote what is appropriate and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. And of course, that advice extends far beyond the decisions of singleness and marriage. It really applies to everything that we do.
It sure does. I mean, just living in light of eternity, that phrase stuck in like a peg, like a mooring for me. Mm-hmm. I know when I heard you use that phrase. But most of us think
in this way. We tend to make decisions based upon immediate gratification, not in light of eternity. We tend to be earthbound. You use that term. I'm not so sure whether or not you're aware that there's actually a shop called Earthbound.
No, I'm not aware of that.
Yeah, I think it may speak to kind of where we're at in our society right now. Anyway.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to have a heaven-bound shop, you know.
No, that would be politically incorrect.
Exactly. You know?
Well, I think they call that Lifeway.
Right? Okay.
Anyway, this section of Scripture is also very encouraging to singles who have the gift of celibacy. It's not like they're second-class citizens deserving our sympathy. You mentioned that. That was so insightful and I know helpful to so many.
Right. Yeah, there really is such a thing as the gift of celibacy, and Paul talks about this. And certainly there are real advantages to remaining single. But here Paul discusses not only those advantages, but also some of the proper principles that we need to apply in our everyday decision-making. We need to have the proper perspective of life in light of eternity. And he moves from there to the practical priorities of life in light of eternity. And finally, he speaks of the preeminent preoccupation of life in light of eternity. Mm-hmm.
So good.
And frankly, unless these principles rule our heart, our flesh will rule our life. And when this happens, believers forfeit earthly blessing and even eternal reward, and their lives end up in misery.
Well, and this is what happens. If we're honest, so many of us default to having our flesh rule our life. Mm-hmm. And man, what a good word. It's so true. And we should listen to some of your exposition on this subject and see how the Spirit applies these truths for our individual lives. You want to?
That sounds good.
Let's listen.
So first of all, as he addresses singles, and by extension all of us, we must have the proper perspective of life in light of eternity. Now, let's look at the passage in verse 25. He says, "Now concerning virgins," and this refers to both men and women, "I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who by the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy." In other words, the Lord did not specifically address some of these things in his earthly ministry. But Paul's apostolic opinion is inspired. That's the idea. Inspired by the Holy Spirit is therefore trustworthy. In other words, it's able to be relied upon. It's fully authoritative. Verse 26, "I think then that this is good in view of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is." In other words, he's saying, you single Christians, you should remain single, assuming you have the gift of celibacy, as he addressed in verse 7. And he says, verse 27, "Are you bound to a wife?" In other words, are you married? He says, "Do not seek to be released." Marriage is a lifelong commitment. Don't seek a divorce unless there's biblical grounds and so forth. Or, he says, are you released from a wife? In other words, are you unmarried? He says, do not seek a wife. So he's kind of leaving it open here, whatever you want to do. And then he says in verse 28, "But if you marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Yet such will have trouble in this life. And I am trying to spare you." Now, we're going to see, some of you are already giggling because you know that there's trouble when you get married, right? Well, we'll get to that a little bit, but there's going to be three concerns that Paul mentions that we've got to take into consideration, and especially those that are considering marriage. Concerns that frankly should extend to all of us and govern everything that we determine in our life. The first concern is one that I just read here in verse 26. He says, "In view of this present distress." Now, we're not sure what that was, but we are sure that they were sure what it was. But we do know from the word distress, a term in the original language that carries the idea of a situation of great need that has been brought about by some calamity, we know that whatever the distress was, it was serious. So therefore, it is reasonable to assume that what Paul is describing here when he says this present distress is a reference to some kind of severe and probably mounting persecution upon the believers. Now, we know Paul has already experienced a lot of this from the Gentiles and especially from the Jews. But we must also realize that this letter was written in A.D. 55. And that's important because this was 1 year after a 17-year-old boy by the name of Nero became the most depraved, satanic ruler in all of history. In fact, within 10 years of the writing of this letter, he began his ruthless and his barbaric attack on Christians. So not only must they be concerned about this present distress, but secondly, in verse 29, he says, "But this I say, brethren, the time has been shortened." Now this is interesting. The term time in the original language, kairos, it's one that speaks of a definite, fixed period of time. And what we're seeing here is that this specific period of time has been condensed. It's been shortened, probably in light of the persecution. It's been compressed. And certainly none of us are going to live very long. Life is short. James says that it is a vapor that appears for a little while and then it vanishes away. And how much more in times of persecution, mounting persecution? Time is short. Life as we know it, dear friends, is only a footnote in eternity when you think about it. So the point here, don't live for that which is short-lived. And then thirdly, a final concern is in verse 31. He says, the form of this world is passing away. Form, schema in Greek. It means shape or appearance. In other words, all that is in the world, all that we can see, it's all passing away. This needs to influence your thoughts, dear ones, as you consider marriage. You see, all that we know, dear friends, all that we see, all of the nations of the world, all of the oceans, the mountains, all of creation, all of the stars in heaven, it's all passing away. It's all temporal. Think about it. Your loved ones, your parents, your spouse, your children, all your possessions, your own body, it's all passing away. So we need to have the proper perspective of life and eternity. So Paul then, as we think about it, he moves from the proper perspective here that we need to have of life in light of eternity. And he also shows, secondly, the practical priorities of life in light of eternity. When we have the proper eternal perspective, he's going to essentially say that Christians should live as if they have no wives. They should live as if they have no mourning, as if they have no happiness, as if they have no permanent possessions and no engrossments. And this is fascinating, the argument that he gives here and the instructive illustrations. And I'm going to break it down into four categories. We have to have priorities in terms of relationships, emotions, possessions, and affections. Just real briefly. First of all, in terms of our relationships, and he uses the example of wives that extends to all family relationships. Verse 29, he says, the time has been shortened so that from now on, those who have wives should be as though they had none. Now, obviously, he's not contradicting all of the important teachings regarding, you know, loving your spouse and your family. But what he's doing here is stressing the matter of practical priority in relationships in light of eternity. He's saying marriage and family must never be a priority that restricts your obligation to serve the Lord. In other words, don't allow your devotion to your spouse and by extension your family to eclipse your devotion to the Lord. If I can put it a little bit differently, don't deify your marriage. Don't deify your family. And I fear that many times this happens. Beloved, I hope you hear this right, but remember, your spouse and your family is passing away. Yes, marriage lasts for our short life, but only for our life. You realize there's no marriage in heaven, Matthew 22:30. I think Jesus summarizes so well in Luke 14, verse 26. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Hate carries the idea of having a lesser love than love for Christ, a devotion to him that is so strong that everything else in comparison seems like hatred. Beloved, Paul's concern here is don't be earthbound. Live your life in light of eternity. Make decisions in light of that. Think how the cause of Christ has been diminished because Family comes before the Lord's work. Think of how many families are deprived of worship and instruction on the Lord's Day because they are simply exhausted from being involved in so many other things that have absolutely no eternal value. Husbands, wives, parents, what are the priorities in your life that your kids are learning from you? Do they see you living in light of eternity? That's the point. The second practical priority that should be a concern is that of emotions, sorrow and joy. Notice in verse 30, and those who weep as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. In other words, the sorrows and joys of this life are merely transient and imaginary when compared to the sorrows of those who are going to perish in their sins and the joys of those who will enter one day into paradise. Again, let me keep summarizing it. Life is dangerous when you live for Christ. Life is short and the world is passing away. The great Puritan Matthew Henry said this, "We must not be dejected too much with any of our afflictions, nor indulge ourselves in the sorrow of the world, but keep up a holy joy in God in the midst of all our troubles, so that even in sorrow the heart may be joyful, and the end of our grief may be gladness." Then he says, "Weeping may endure for a night, but joy will come in the morning." And likewise, Paul says, "And those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice." In other words, make sure you find your happiness in the proper things. Let's don't merely rejoice over things that are temporal. Yes, let's celebrate, let's rejoice in all of the good things that God has given us, like marriage, and even the gift of singleness for those that have that, and every other blessing of life. But let's hold on to those joys lightly. Don't allow the things that we find pleasure in this world to be the greatest source of our satisfaction and the greatest source of solace in our life. Look beyond them. Constantly look beyond them. Look into glory. Look into heaven and the eternal joy of living one day in the presence of the lover of our soul. Keep that eternal perspective. Let's control our emotions by viewing everything that's, whether it's bad or good in life, in the lens or through the lens of eternity. If it brings sorrow, live beyond it. If it brings joy, let it point you to heaven where the real joy is going to be. He gives a third practical priority in the realm of possessions, verse 30. And those who buy as those who did not possess. We all know that the pursuit and the accumulation of material possessions can be a great distraction when it comes to living life in light of eternity. We can unwittingly lay up our treasures here on earth rather than in heaven. And then little by little we become preoccupied with the externals of life. And we ignore the internal realities of our heart. And we find ourselves attached to things that are passing away. Don't cling to the things of this world, he's telling them. He's telling us. They're disappearing. You're not going to take them with you. The fourth practical priority is in the realm of affections. Verse 31. And those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it. I confess, I don't fully understand what he's saying here, but I'll give you my best shot, okay? The word use, participle, chromanoi, is in contrast to katai kramanoi, those who abuse it. There's using and there's abusing. And what he's saying here, I believe, is that we all need to use this world to survive, and rightfully so. But let's don't let the world start using us. Let's don't let the world make it our slave. We've got to be careful that we don't make those wonderful things that God gives us idols of our heart that distract us from worshiping and serving God and abusing the things of this world. Because then the world begins to take the affections of our heart. And again, in verse 31, he says, "For the form of this world is passing away." So after giving us four practical priorities of life, these categories concerning relationships, emotions, possessions, and affections, we move to the preeminent preoccupation. What is the most important preoccupation we should have of life in light of eternity? And this is not only, again, it's not only for those that he's speaking to who are wondering about getting married. It extends to every believer in every area of life. Notice verse 32. But I want you to be free from concern. And we already have a sense of why he would say that. He goes on, he says, the one who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. And his interests are divided. I mean, he's just stating a fact here. We all know this. Obviously, single people have far fewer concerns than married people, especially married people with families. He goes on then in verse 34 at the end. He says, the woman who is unmarried. By the way, here the term refers to divorced. The woman who is unmarried and the virgin, in other words, one who is single by divorce, is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own benefit, not to put a restraint, literally carries the idea of putting a rope around or a harness around or a legalistic noose. I'm not trying to put a legalistic noose upon you, but, and this is so important, to promote what is appropriate and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. Folks, this must be the preeminent preoccupation of life in light of eternity. What he says right here. To promote what is appropriate and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. In 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 3, Paul said that I'm afraid lest as the serpent deceived Eve in the garden through his craftiness, that your mind should be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. You see, that has to be the preeminent preoccupation. Look, folks, your family, your job, all these things that you spend so much of your time and your money, all that's passing away. The only thing that matters is what you do for Christ. Beloved, especially you singles, I challenge you to examine your own heart. Do you have the proper perspective of life in light of eternity? Threefold, living for Christ is dangerous in this world. Life is short, and also this world is passing away. Do these factors influence your decisions? That's the point. And practically speaking, you need to make it your priority to view your relationships, your emotions, your possessions, and your affections in light of eternity. That's what Paul is saying. Do you do this? Can this be said of you? And then finally, is your preeminent preoccupation in life, in light of eternity, to promote what is appropriate and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord? Oh, I pray that it is. I pray that this is the passion of your heart. And again, your checkbook and your calendar, and I might add, those who know you best will help you determine the truth regarding these things.
Speak to the person that kind of sits there and thinks through maybe their disappointment in a marriage or their loss of a loved one.
Yeah, we can all find ourselves increasingly disenchanted with our life and certainly with the world in which we live. No matter what your situation, no matter how good it is, as you grow in Christ, you find yourself increasingly disenchanted with the world and even disappointed with your own life. You know, my wife and I have talked about this, how at times we're just saddened that we are not what we once hoped to be. And how regret becomes a dominating theme. You know, you look back on your life and you think, oh, if I'd only done this or that. And then also you add to that, you know, the inevitable pain of life or perhaps persecution and certainly sorrow. And all of those things loosen our grip on this world, and then our bodies grow weaker as we age, and we have less emotional and physical stamina to endure. And even though we rejoice in all of the blessings God has lavished upon us, we find ourselves longing more and more for heaven.
We do. And I think a lot of people feel like they're alone in that. I really think people just suffer in silent isolation on that, don't they?
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. You know, Paul said in Romans 8 that he considered the sufferings of this present time not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. And he went on to say, and not only this, but also we ourselves as believers, having the first fruits of the Spirit, we ourselves, he says, groan within ourselves, waiting eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. And so as we pensively reflect upon the reality of life and perhaps the severe disappointments and sorrow that we may be experiencing, we find ourselves as believers looking beyond the temporal and gazing upon the eternal. And looking beyond life as we can see it right now and find ourselves just basking in the light of hope. And that becomes our great consolation, or at least this should be the way we live. And this ties into this whole concept of learning to live life in light of eternity.
Boy, it does. I think of a phrase and I can't help it. It's going to sound like some kind of a weird platitude perhaps, but I remember when the Lord really began to do a work in my heart. I remember hearing someone speaking at a concert, and the person said, I just remember the phrase, fall in love with Jesus. Now, I don't know where the theology of the person was, but really, it circles back to that, doesn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, that communicates, doesn't it?
That's right. That's right. And as I hear you talk, I'm reminded of Paul's word in Colossians 3:2. Remember, there he says to set your mind on the things above, not on the things that are on earth, for you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God.
If Shepherd's Fire has been an encouragement to you, please consider partnering with us. There's so many ways you can do that. First, we covet your prayers. Please ask the Lord to abundantly supply the resources needed to do what we believe the Lord's called and gifted us to do. You could also help simply by spreading the word, follow us on social media, or share a link. Or consider sending a financial gift. In any case, please visit us at shepherdsfire.org and click on Partner. There you can also hear this exposition in its entirety. Just click on Sermons, then search for the title, Advantages to Singleness. And if you're ever in the Nashville area, please make plans to visit us at Calvary Bible Church in Jolton. We're glad you could be with us for this edition of Shepherd's Fire, proclaiming the unsearchable riches of Christ.